Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I'm your host, Marlon Ranger, and of course, I got my man, Mr. Lou. What's going on, my man?
What's up?
Yes, sir. You know, this time of year, celebrating the late, great Jesus and the mission that he set forth, and those that are believers, and also those who are non-believers who believe in rabbits with eggs, even though rabbits and bunnies don't have eggs. Nevertheless, candy and egg hunts for everybody. A wonderful intro. No, wishing everybody, you know, the great Easter. Just trying to remind us all what it's about. You know what I mean? It's the message. It's all about the message, and it's great. It's a Sunday night. A lot of things going, you know. Food with family. Everybody probably wore their best outfit to church. Best outfit. Even the one that outdid the outfit they wore to the club for the past year. You know what I mean? But never mind. Never left that. Happy Easter, everybody. And it's great. Lou, big news, big stories, big headlines. And of course, I want to start the show off and give in and come in with a strong message. See, you know, I like to call this message before they were kings. That's what I'm going to label this message today. It's almost like I'm going to give a sermon, but not necessarily a true sermon, but just wanted to just go ahead and into the conversation and say before they was kings, because what I noticed within the past 10 to 15 years, and this is in every sport, is that the media seems to always make these kinds of predictions. And see, listen, there's nothing wrong with predictions, but it's just the fact that you give people the idea that they are great before they actually accomplish or finalize their greatness. You get where I'm going with? See, this has been a trend that I've seen, and we've seen it quite often in the past 10 years. You know, I can remember going back to the USC Texas game. And when, before they announced the national championship game between Vince Young and Matt Leiner, Pete Carroll versus Mack Brown, Reggie Bush ended up winning the Heisman Trophy. You remember, and Vince Young was a runner up, and basically he felt that he got robbed of that. And they faced off in that matchup, and it was already starting to do exposés, and the media was hyping up USC back to the championship again, and how they're one of the best dynasties in history. That team would have been matched up against any great team in history. And little to us all, what we tend to forget is that you have to play the game. See, you can't be elevated to greatness until you complete the actual task, right? This is very standing in all things. When we look at greatness as a whole, those teams actually accomplished and fulfilled greatness by completing their task. And what the media tends to do is when it looks or mirrors greatness, they catch it before it's actually completed, and then they label something great. Well, needless to say, after that game, we got to see a chance and have an opportunity to see Texas play one of the best games that I've ever seen. That's the best college football game that I've ever seen. And Vince Young and Texas pulled off the upset, winning 41-38 in the Rose Bowl. And then all of a sudden now, everybody started to use their backtracking technique. A little bit far from that, a little bit further up the road, 2007, we saw an 18-0 New England Patriots face off against the New York Giants team that happened to go on a roll, barely slide into the playoffs, but were playing at the height of their greatness and went through the NFC on the road to beat everybody. Faced off against Tom Brady and the prolific offense. And before the game was actually completed, we were saying, greatest team in the history, 18-0, going to go 19-0. They're going to win. They're going to win. And needless to say, the final outcome was them falling short of victory. And it hurt. It really hurt because at that particular time, we were looking at the fact that they were not elevated to a high level for or without reason. No, they weren't. What happened? What was the situation? They were elevated before they actually completed the task. We wanted to make comparisons to that undefeated Dolphin team, and everybody says, well, times change, things happen, and the teams aren't as strong, and it's more talent now. Yet and still, before they got to that mantle, before they got elevated, this is something that transpired. They lost. And here we go once again. And I'm sure there's other situations in between there because we can go to the Miami Heat and how great they were and how that team matched up and how they just couldn't be beaten. And then all of a sudden, they come against a windmill called the San Antonio Spurs, and they ended up losing in 5 games by a record margin. And once again, that happened. And so we always come to an understanding of things or a generalization or understanding of what goes on or what transpires. And we tend to feel like we understand what greatness is before greatness actually happens. So then you got to ask yourself, Lou, when we're watching, because we saw Kentucky, and we watched them in this Final Four. They was 37-38-0 when they was on their way. But, you know, we started to see little chinks in the armor along the way, you know, struggling early on against their first-round opponent, coming in not looking exactly crisp, and then going and ascending and playing against a Notre Dame team that won the ACC, and they played them, and they played them rather strong. They played them tough and figured, hey, you know, this team really gave them all they could handle, and they was within a field goal of actually tying or a three-pointer of actually winning the game. And then now they face off against a Wisconsin team, with who, by the way, has a player of the year, but nevertheless, all these blue chippers and All-Americans and McDonald's All-Americans playing together under Kyle Lowry, and they're playing and they're elevated to greatness and elevated to one of the best teams that have ever played. Can you imagine that, Lou? Brought in, come in, and already gaining this high level of respect without actually having an opportunity to prove that they are the best because they have not yet won the NCAA tournament. But the media and everybody else has elevated them to champions. And I'm guilty of it at times as well. I'm not saying that I didn't pick these teams, but what I do is pull myself back into a perspective to understand that the season or the tournament is not over. And what we watched and what we witnessed last night was the hopes of millions and the opinions of millions come to an abrupt pause, come to a stop to say that, hey, we thought too far ahead. Guess what, guys? Kentucky is not one of the greatest teams in history. Well, they lost one game. Yes, they did. They lost a game where they could not afford to lose a game. As a matter of fact, once they got into the tournament, from that point on, they could not afford to lose another game. Why? Because this will put them in a class of greatness. And the teams that are the greatest accomplish and win championships. This is a known fact. This is how you measure greatness. You want to measure Michael Jordan against somebody else? You better have championship wins on the resume, because that's the only way you can step into the same category. That's where you can only get mentioned or even put in the same discussion as a Michael Jordan, is when you elevate yourself to having championships. Now, LeBron James has two. He has two championships, four losses. Am I correct? Lost with Cleveland. He's 2-3, right? Is that right? He's 2-3. He lost one with Cleveland and two with Miami Heat. Dallas, and he lost against San Antonio. So he lost to San Antonio twice. So he's 2-3. So he's in a discussion. But overall, he's not Michael Jordan. And that's neither here nor there, but he can at least enter the discussion and be viewed as legendary, for he has elevated himself to that. He has completed the task more than once, I would say. And you look at Kentucky here, Kentucky 38-0. You know, they were favored to win the whole tournament. They was, Lou. You know that I know. I think we picked them to win. They looked on, you know, we watched them. And see, you know what I'm starting to learn, Lou? Is that there are certain teams, see, this is the thing, it's very hard to gauge the level of competition that everybody plays, isn't it? That's a difficult task, isn't it, Lou? Before, we had an idea what was great because everybody was pretty good back in those days. The talent level was at its all-time high because everybody was staying 2, 3, and 4 years. You know, the Kristen Leitner teams, the Chris Webber teams even stayed together for 3 years. And you look at it, these teams are constantly changing year to year. And sometimes the conference that a pretty good team plays in is really not as strong as we thought. There are certain other conferences that year that might actually be stronger or better. You look at this, the Big Ten. They had two teams in the Final Four. They did pretty strong or pretty well going into the tournament, didn't they, Lou? They measured well. And we look at the SEC, look at that conference, and you know what? They didn't do so well. Not so good. Didn't really get too far. I mean, Duke, we've seen Duke all day, and we look at Duke's schedule. They played a tough stuff. They beat that Notre Dame team. They lost to them in the ACC championship, but they beat that team. They beat Wisconsin head up. Who really did Kentucky play? And I'm sure they played some high-level teams, but in comparison to what Wisconsin and what Duke and what Michigan State faced, you look at that schedule, and all of a sudden you begin to see weaknesses in armor. See, this is why there is a big difference between legendary and really good. There's a gap. There's a big river in between that, between us. As we use a symbolic characteristic, I'll say there is a Red Sea between us, between great and pretty good. Okay, it's a couple of notches in between there. And people must realize and come to that understanding that you have to play this thing all the way out. We have to wait till the whole thing. We have to wait till the deal is signed, sealed, delivered. We have to make sure that this is actually down. We need to make sure of that. And it has become apparent to us that greatness is fulfilled. It is not prejudged. It is basically a culmination of a whole season, a championship, before we start to crown people. You can't crown everybody or anybody until they actually win. That just makes sense, right, Lou? But that's not, I know that this is a new trend within the past few years, 10, 15 years, where we want to start crowning teams and calling them the greatest ever before they actually finish their task. And everybody was 40-0. Mm-hmm. Well, the reality is 38-1. That's reality. That's what happened. We cannot get away from it. This Wisconsin team, by the way, is pretty solid. I must say, that's a solid team. It is, right, Lou? We can't deny that anymore. This team is solid. They got Kaminsky right here. And, of course, you know, there was a lot of sore losing on the part of somebody on Kentucky's team. I'm not going to say his name, but he made reference and said something that wasn't appropriate in the midst of his defeat. And it's so funny. See, people, I always tell you, people demonstrate their real characteristic when they're forced to deal with some type of setback. This is when you begin to see when reveal themselves and who they truly are, is when they face adversity, when they struggle, when the screws is being twisted and you're up there yelling for help. These are when things start to occur. You show your true characteristic when the pressure is being applied. Now, when everything is going good and everybody's winning and everybody's happy, we don't actually get to know you because you're not really experiencing any setbacks. Everything is okay, right? So we're winning, so everybody's blowing their little party horn and throwing the confetti and dancing in the middle of the room. It's okay because we're winning. But now when we lose, see, this is when we realize what we're actually made of. When we lose, when we realize that there will be no tomorrow. This is what happens, Lou. And we see it. And pressure bust pipes. It does. It does. And it also makes diamonds. It does. It can make you either way. Either be a bad situation or something beautiful. That's reality. And in this case, for Kentucky, it looked like it turned into a busted pipe. Busted pipe. No good, no good, no good. But now the team will be vastly different than it does now. A lot of those players are one and done and they're gone. But I don't know if I could myself deal with that kind of situation. I myself wouldn't want to leave because I can't believe I lost after being 38-0, and I lost. So me and myself, I'd be looking to return and get revenge. I need that chip. This is a different generation. And it's not about wins and losses. It's about the money. And trust me, it was about the money a long time ago. It's just that it was maybe second to maybe 1B on the list. You know how you have 1A and 1B? It might have been 1B back then. You know, winning is always going to be 1A because you're a competitor. You want to win. And then the money, yep, that's a reward for the effort and all the hard work. So that's a 1B. And I think it was a little bit more even back then, or probably a little bit reversed. But now, the money is just solely number one. And winning, I don't even think that's a requirement anymore. I think that falls maybe down to 3 or 4. I don't think a lot of these new guys care about winning. Only the really great, exceptional players care about winning and making a point, you know, bringing their team to make them rise like the cream. To sit on top there. It means something to them. That's just been what I've personally noticed more myself. So I went on and on, but, you know, hey, before greatness, you got to play the game, and you have to be focused. You have to be able to deal with pressure. And in Kentucky's case, they didn't seem to pass the test. So our championship game is matched up. It will be Duke, and Duke just blasted Michigan State, which I don't think it was necessarily a surprise because, listen, Michigan State, they didn't have the talent that they normally do this season. This was just a phenomenal coaching job by Tom Izzo. He put his player in the best possible situations to compete and win, and they did, but when they faced off against a team that was more talented, they lost, and they lost big. They lost by 20 points, 81-61, so our championship is set up. It will be Duke, Wisconsin. Duke won early on. So this is going to be a great game. And I'm telling you, this Wisconsin team is pretty solid. They got it in their eyes. I tell you, this Duke team. So, Lou, I've done a lot of talking. I just want to hear your feedback on what you think. And I want to hear what you necessarily see between this matchup. Has it lost its luster? Give us a little insight on Kentucky. Give us a little insight on Michigan State Duke. It's not really much there because we knew. You know, Tom Izzo just did a phenomenal job. But this Wisconsin team is starting to come off as special to me. So tell me what you see, Lou.
Well, as far as Michigan State and Duke, I can't really speak much on it because I didn't watch much of it. If you have a, I mean, that's the general rule. If you have a team that doesn't show up to play, why should I show up to watch you? they literally just didn't show up to play. I see it in their demeanor, their whole mannerisms. It's like, okay, so what's the point of me even watching this? Dude's gonna run away with this. I'm not gonna bother watching the rest of this. And as for the other game, Kentucky Wisconsin, going into the game, I expected Wisconsin to have an advantage over Kentucky. And in all actuality, they have an advantage over Kentucky because both teams have have good players in the front court, but Wisconsin has good players in the front court that can also play the perimeter. So you have big men that can play inside and also stretch the floor out on the perimeter. Even easy baskets on give and go, pick and roll plays, you know, slash into the lane, which is what you saw a little bit of. They didn't do much of it, but what actually helped them more in that department is that they hustled more when, you know, there was loose balls, you know, scramble on defense and offense, you know. They did just a little bit more on the extra things than Kentucky did. And adding to, as I said before, big men playing an inside-outside game, they had the advantage over Kentucky. And the game stayed close along the way. Wisconsin was going to pull out.
Yeah. What a game. And it was pretty good. It was close right up to the end until, you know, and they tried to put them to the line, and it just didn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. They made their free throws. I mean, they closed the gap. At one point, I believe it was, 64-63. And from that point on, Wisconsin was knocking down their free throws, and they just came through. They demonstrated. And I guess Bo Ryan basically set us straight, right? And, I mean, that's just not really much to go against what they accomplished and what they did. I mean, they managed to come up big in a big moment. And it was a tremendous amount of pressure on their shoulders, just as much as Kentucky. They have pressure as well. Nobody really gave them an opportunity to win. I heard Skip Bayless basically pick Kentucky to win by double digits. This is what I thought was a little bit over the top. I figured it would have been, but then again, he's that kind of guy, right? And of course, you know, when you hear these things, you know, in the long run, you're going to definitely come to a point to where you're going to see, well, there was certain mitigating circumstances. You'll hear an excuse. You won't hear them just say I'm wrong. Well, I know Stephen A. will. I don't, you know. I'm going to tell you, Skip Bayless has a hard time admitting that he's wrong pretty much on anything. So we'll just have to watch and see what happens come tomorrow or listen in to see what his response was to the situation and scenario. So that'll be interesting. But so we look at this matchup. Everybody did want to see Duke, Kentucky, but they're not going to see that. Going to see a rematch of a tough game that happened earlier this season between Duke and Wisconsin. And, Lou, if you had to pick right now, who would you have? Who would you pick?
I'm going with Wisconsin. they're going to do the same. I expect them to go out and do the same thing they did against Kentucky, use their size to their advantage on the outside and hustle on defense, you know, offense as well. You know, they pretty much have the same type of advantage over Duke as they did with Kentucky. They just need to be more. They just need to be more careful, you know, controlling the ball in the half court, you know, and continue rolling their offense, you know, the inside out game with the big man.
So you got Wisconsin by how many points? Give me an idea of what the score's gonna look like.
I'll say 68
to 59.
11 point loss. Yeah. No, 68 to 59.
Okay. Duke's gonna get held to 59 points. Wow. Okay.
It's gonna be sloppy.
That's the man's pick. It's gonna be sloppy.
Yeah, well, it's going to be sloppy, and they're going to end up with like a free throw game towards, you know, the final minute, you know, trying to catch up and keep trying to put them to the line.
Well, I tell you, Lou, one of the few times me and the great man Lou disagree. I am picking Duke this whole tournament. I did say early on that they had the easiest road to the Final Four. But the way they beat Michigan State, and they beat Wisconsin early on this season, not to say this is the same Wisconsin team. I think this is a little better Wisconsin team. I believe that Duke is going to win this championship, and I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be 81-78. That's my score. 81 Duke, 78 Wisconsin. It's going to be down the wire all night long. It's going to come down to the last 5 minutes of the game. Whose defense will prevail? I'm going to pick Duke's defense. I think they're quicker. But, I mean, it's really going to go either way, and it's just going to come down to a few plays, a few mistakes. But I think Duke will make the least of those mistakes. And I'm picking Duke to win again. Just ask you, that would be what, number four for him? So,
yeah.
I picked Duke 81-78. Wisconsin, great run. You beat Kentucky. Ultimately, I think Duke is a little better. That's kind of my pick. It's going to be interesting. What time does the game start? Start, what, 9 o'clock or so tomorrow?
Usually prime time on Monday.
Okay.
Like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, probably. I'm watching the women's Final Four game. We got another one down the wire right now with Notre Dame and
South Carolina.
Right? Yep. 13 seconds left, and Notre Dame's up by one.
You know, did you hear what Gino Auriemma said, basically how the men's game is just ridiculous? And he really didn't speak high of the women's game, too, that far behind as far as like evolution as far as the game to be played. And I agree with him. He's actually being the only one that's honest. But, you know, the thing about women's basketball is like we already know who's going to be dominant. To be quite honest, in every sport we kind of have an idea who's going to be the dominant franchises every year. Let's be real about it, right, Lou? I mean, every year, you look at the NBA, who's going to be the dominant team? Oh, San Antonio. Oh, whoever LeBron James played for. Oh, you know, the Mavericks. You know, the Chicago Bulls. Anywhere you have really good coaching and pretty good players, those are going to be your favorites every year. The Rockets, the Trailblazers. That's the NBA. You know, the NFL, same thing. Patriots, Colts, Denver, anywhere Peyton Manning is, Aaron Rodgers, Packers. Tony Romo, Dallas, they'll be in the mix. Won't necessarily be the best, but Seattle, we have an idea of who the teams, who the best teams is. It's usually one or two teams that come out and surprise you and flip what they did from the year previous, right? Every once in a while we see that. So, I mean, we have an idea. But in women's basketball, it's like you just know every year who's almost going to be automatically in the Final Four. You already know sometimes every time it seems like it's going to be UConn. And Ariana still, he's going to break the record. He's going to have, what, like 10 championships? He already has, what, 8? Or does he have 9? Mm-hmm. I can't even remember. And Pat Summitt had 9, right? But, of course, she had to leave because she was starting to have symptoms of dementia, and that really affected. So she pretty much, she left the game. He's going to finish it off. He's definitely going to break that record. He's going to end up like Phil Jackson, 11 or 12 championships. I don't see anybody beating him. Every year, consistently. And you see, the women's game, if you actually watch a women's basketball game, it's actually more entertaining than the college men. I'm not going to lie to you, it is. I mean, you know why? Because those girls, they're forced to stay there 4 years. And then they get their degree. So it's like they're better as teams. They're more athletic as teams as far as women's perspective up to their capability, right? Because they're growing the team, they play with the team. They're at the peak of their profession. They're intelligent. They get their degree. They spend the 4 years, and then they hop to the WNBA. And then the WNBA has a good quality game. But against the NBA, of course, you know, viewership-wise, it's not going to gain the same notoriety. But I told you my idea if you want to change that. Okay, don't get mad with me. I'm just being honest. Yes, I love the game. If you want more viewers, I'm sorry. You might want to just kind of change those uniforms. You might want to make them look a little bit more feminine. You get what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not trying to be inappropriate. I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I trust me, if they were to wear, like, say, you know, like those track tights, they had like a breathable, skin tight uniform that went all the way down to the legs. So they were breathable proof, like the dry fit shirts, but they were like fitting clothes. And all the women, you know, you had the nice colors, and they all each had the colors of the team, and it was like that. Playing basketball, you know, they can move, they can maneuver, they can be quick. Who wouldn't watch that? But I know I'm going to get some kind of sexist backlash thing, but the game is the game. And if it looks good, it's appealing. And if it's appealing, you want to watch. It's already good basketball. If you love basketball, you'll love the women's game. They play great basketball. They play good, great, fundamental basketball. Not that many dunks, but that's okay. The way they rotate the ball or move the ball and high percentage free throws, yes. They play a better brand of basketball. It's fun, you know, it's more interesting for me to watch. I mean, Lou, do you agree with me?
Yeah, and it's just like the women's game, especially for college basketball, it's closer to what the men's game should be. Like, especially to the NBA, it's a faster paced game. And the men's game is pretty much in the state right now, still playing that old black and white 60s style of slowdown game. The men's college game is in the same state right now that we're going through with, you know, Major League Baseball.
Absolutely. Major League Baseball, you know, the problem with Major League Baseball is that it's too slow. I'm just going to say it. They're slow to get on to the bandwagon. They're just not getting, you know, instant replay. I mean, you had all kinds of times and opportunities to get with the program with instant replay. They dragged their feet on it. They're making the game even a little bit better, but they're really imposing all of it on the hitters. You need to get it on the pitchers. You need to get rid of that ball quick. Okay? You don't need to sit there too long. And I tell you, if you want to make baseball very interesting, this is what you need to do, Lou. This is what you need to do. You know, they need to make it more electronic. And I don't know what they need. They got the money. They got billions of dollars. You need to get you an umpire that sits at the back. Okay? Umpire sits right there in the back. When I say in the back, I mean in the back up in some kind of booth, viewing an electronic box, just like they do tennis. You know, when tennis, they hit the ball and they're able to track where the ball bounced. They need to have a strike zone, an electronic strike zone, and keep an umpire in the back watching that, have the catcher there, and just pitch and move quickly. And what you'll see a little bit more home runs, right? But you'll see more accurate play. And let me tell you, the baseball hitters, they'll have to play. It won't be too many people sitting in that outfield too long, right? Sitting waiting for a miracle to come. So, like, I could put a lawn chair out there and sit down and wait for a ball to come, right? Let's be honest. 2-1 and 3-2. You would have more 9-7s and 10-8, and the game would be sped up. It would be high tech. And we would want to watch. See, it's my also, this is my idea for, you know, my idea for NHL, because, listen, you can go to a hockey game live, and, man, that's one of the most exciting things you've ever gone to. Have you ever been to a hockey game?
No, I haven't.
Let me tell you something. That's an experience. But the thing is, it doesn't translate well to television. So what do? To make it more visibly appealing? Oh, they play an outdoor game every once in a while. They have that snow. Remember we seen that? Miracle on Ice, or I forgot what they call that, but, you know, they have that one game of the season where they play that game outdoors, and it just looks good. I always say, you know what they need to do? They need to have a glow-in-the-dark game. You need to have the puck. You need to have a highlighted puck. Jerseys that are highlighted and play completely in the dark. See, because visually, that looks good on television. You have to figure out ways to make the sport entertaining. And I'm just saying, you don't necessarily have to make that the staple, but every once in a while, you got to try different things, make it entertaining for your view. And let me tell you, baseball is very slow. But I tell you what, that women's basketball, that is very fun to watch. But I tell you what, you put them in some body-fitting uniforms that fit and tailor to their body, make them look more feminine, but actually playing the same way, you're going to get more watchers. You're going to get more male viewers. They're going to want to see. And then you can appreciate not only the look, but then also the way they play. You would have a double appreciation. But that's just my sense, and I could be wrong, and I'll be viewed as a sexist individual. But I'm just saying, that's just my opinion about it. And I'm sure we all can have our opinions about it. But, you know, as far as the game is concerned, you're right, Lou. That women's college basketball is fun to watch. It is. I enjoy it. It turns out Notre Dame ended up winning that game 66-65. Maryland and UConn is next.
No final.
9 o'clock.
No final appearance for your girl, Dawn Staley.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, hey, I used to have such a big crush on that woman. But anyway, let me stop. Let me just stop talking right now. Those days are long gone. I'm not going to rehash the past. But anyway, I figured, you know, UConn is almost as money as it can possibly get. I got them, and I got them winning the whole thing for the women's. And, of course, that's going to be entertaining and great to watch. I got to know, what day is the championship for the men's? Because I don't even know when the day is. Is it Monday? Is it Tuesday?
It's usually Monday. It played Saturday, so it usually be Monday.
So it's like the women's will play on Tuesday. That's like strange, like that, ain't it? They play it strange, but you know they can't. Definitely, obviously, they can't play on the same day because one would wipe the other one out. So you don't want that. Yeah. You want to be able to catch both sides. And I like watching the women's basketball, and I like watching women's volleyball. Yes, and women's softball. That's very interesting. That's fun and entertaining. I'm telling you, that's my thing. But before we spend any more time on that, let's get to the NBA. Lou, guess what? Guess what, Lou?
What's that?
Paul George comes back.
Yes, he has.
You know what's funny? He came back before Derrick Rose. Good gracious, man. I mean, what is going on here, man? What is going on here? You know, Lou, see, people always say I'm picking on. Listen, he's not going to win a championship ever, man. He's not going to win one. He's not. He doesn't have the pedigree. Listen, do you remember what Paul George looked like? You remember that, Lou?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, do you remember what that leg looked like when he snapped that thing in half?
We're
like,
spaghetti.
Oh, man, he's gone. Yeah, it looked awful. We definitely said, yo, he's not coming back. He's done. It's a wrap for him. He's not coming back. And guess what? He comes back. Before Derrick Rose. Unbelievable. And, man, you know, and as it stands right now, you look at it, Boston has a one-game lead and two-game lead, or basically one-and-a-half-game lead over the Pacers and a one-game lead over the Heat for that eighth seed. Great job, Lou. It's like somebody from Boston is always going to be in the mix. As you notice, really, to be quite honest with you, Boston's really been dominating sports in all facets over the past decade. People are not even paying attention right now. Between the Patriots, between UConn, between the Boston Celtics, and their consistency in winning, and even baseball when it comes to the Red Sox, Boston has been really taking up a lot of just consistency of greatness, more so than New York over these past decades. And people don't like to hear that, but it's the absolute truth. It is. They're really the team in the Northeast. Sorry, big brother. It's not yours anymore. And every dog has his day, and every cat and every person has his season, just like fruit. And I'm telling you, Boston has been dominating in athletics in the Northeast. New York has fallen off. They haven't really done anything. The Knicks is terrible. The Jets are terrible. The Giants haven't done anything in a few years here. It's only Eli that's really done something, and that was it. But, I mean, you look at it, he hasn't been consistently in the playoffs. We don't want to talk about the Rutgers. We don't want to talk about basketball. We don't want to talk about football. We don't even want to talk about baseball. New York has basically slipped and fell off to the other side of the ocean, and Boston has risen. They have taken over the Northeast. And it's true. It's true. I mean, it's what it is. Yeah. We look at the Eastern Conference as it stands right now. Atlanta Hawks have basically clinched that first seed. Cleveland has, you know, what is it, 50? So they got 5 games left. If they win one more game, I think they clinch the second seed, which they'll probably do. The Bulls won't win that. The Bulls are sitting there at 46-31. They're going to be fighting between them and the Toronto Raptors for the 3-4 seed. I really think that Washington is still even in that race. 3-5 is still fighting for that third seed and fourth and fifth seed. Washington's only 2 games back. That's it. And the Raptors only 1 game back. And the Bulls are up by 2 games. So 2 more games, I would think, 50-50. No, actually, 2 more games, and I think Chicago would clinch that. If they win 2 more and Washington wins. So basically, if they win 4 more games, they're going to clinch that because I think they have the head-to-head against the Raptors. They beat them 4 games to nothing. So if they win 4 games, they're going to win. Depending on if everybody wins 4 games. For the Raptors, they need 5 games and a couple of helpful losses from Chicago and the Wizards. The Wizards, I think, have a pretty good head-to-head matchup against the Bulls. They've basically been coming on as of late. They're peaking at the right moment. And I tell you, Lou, 44-33, if they can go out and win, they'll basically tussle between that fifth to third. So, but as it stands now, Chicago's the 3rd seed, Toronto's the 4th seed, Washington's the 5th seed, And, of course, Milwaukee, they're not going to go any higher. They're staying there at that sixth seed. And between Brooklyn, between Boston, and between the Heat and the Pacers, still in it. They're going to be fighting for the seventh and eighth seed. That's right. Even Charlotte's still alive. I mean, you have, what, seven games left? Six games left. 76, six games left. So there's a possibility that, hey, this can go right down to the wire with those last spots, and it's going to be very interesting. But I tell you, with Indiana bringing back Paul George, it looks like they have an opportunity here to do something. And the Heat have struggled. They've lost three games in a row. And they basically, you know, tall man there, the one that had Chris the Bosh. lung issue, Chris Bosh. How did I forget that? I don't know. I'm getting old. That's what I'm attributing to, age and attrition. Basically, Chris Bosh is out. So, and they pretty much struggled with what they have. So that's what that looks like. You look in the West, obviously, Golden State, they've clinched. They're sitting there at 63-13. This is the best record they've ever had as a franchise. Steve Kerr, you know, hey, you got to give him Coach of the Year this year. I mean, he's doing it. The Rockets sitting there as a two seed. Can you believe that? I can't believe that. But James Harden, I think he's making an impression for a good P. I think between him and Curry, they might go ahead and have to share that. But as of late, I would say that, you know, Harden's been making a nice little push. I think Westbrook is somewhat falling off there, and Oklahoma's basically falling backwards after they've lost three. But then that's – Rockets are sitting at 2-3 Memphis, 4 Portland, which is kind of strange that Portland's at 4, even though the Clippers have a better record at 51-26. Let me ask you this, Lou. Say the seeds stay at 4-5, but the Clippers end up being or having a better record than Portland. Wouldn't that switch? Like, they might have the seed, but they would get the home court advantage because they have the better record? Because I think it's just staying true to the division, right? That's why they have it like that, because the Clippers are second in their division.
It's more of, I think it's more of division. Because I don't think the Clippers and Portland are in the same division. That's why it's like that.
Yeah. But if they do win out and the Clippers have a better record, they would get the home field. Even though they have opposing seeds. I think they did that 1 year. I'm not necessarily sure to look into that and see some research on that, but I'm not sure. But you look at that, the Clippers, Portland, and San Antonio almost have the same exact record.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, San Antonio can go right back up to number three. Now, that's in the running for three. Yeah, they are. They actually are. They've won six games in a row. They very dangerous. The Rockets have done, they've looked pretty solid. And, you know, you see Dallas sitting there at number seven, everybody saying, well, they've lost two in a row and they've been okay. Let me tell you something. When they get into the playoffs, they're going to be tough. That bottom half, 5-8, is going to be tough. But right now, I don't think anybody can beat Golden State. And when I say anybody, only team that can challenge Golden State otherwise, I think, would be Cleveland. I think they're going to run through. And maybe San Antonio, of course. You can't. Dangerous. And Dallas sitting there at 7. Oklahoma City still sitting there at 8. OKC. But they've been struggling. They've lost three games in a row. And they better turn it quick or it'll be Anthony Davis having it and trying his hand. I don't know what the head-to-head matchup between those two are, but I think it's even. I'd have to check. I'm not necessarily sure. I know that the Thunder have a better conference record. There's basically 5 games left for Oklahoma City and 6 games left for New Orleans. So if they win tonight, they'll be tied. Phoenix is almost dead, but not quite dead, right?
So, yeah, it's not quite there and not going to be there for maybe another couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think so. Them and the Jazz. The Jazz is coming up. Somebody's going to fall off within this. But, between New Orleans, Phoenix, and Utah.
Yeah, the Jazz are going to do a lot better next year. We're telling people about that rookie, Gobert, and he is doing almost Anthony Davis type of thing. So they're going to be there next year, and especially if they keep Trey Burke, they're going to be all right for next year.
Man, and I tell you, remember Sacramento started out pretty good, and then they just kind of tailed off. They basically got boat raced. So did Denver. Denver looked strong early on, and they just kind of fell apart. Yeah, you know, didn't want to play for Shaw. And they're done. So, I mean, this is going to be great, man. I think the NBA playoffs this season, man. I think you could potentially have, you can almost have the first six matchups to go to seven games. I look in the Western Conference. I think Golden State's going to be Oklahoma Thunder in like maybe six games, so I don't think that. But Houston, Dallas, that looks seven games. Memphis at San Antonio, that looks seven games. The Clippers at Portland, that game, that looks seven games. And you're going to the Eastern Conference, okay, Atlanta versus Boston versus Miami versus, you know, the Indiana Pacers. I think either one of those teams are going to get at least two games. They're going to go to six. Cleveland at Brooklyn, that'll be done, you know, or rather be Boston. I think Cleveland is a bad matchup for anybody early on. But the Bucks and the Bulls, yeah, I can see seven. And Toronto and Wizards, I can see seven. So, you know, it's a lot of great matchups. I can see five to six playoff series going in seven games. It's that crucial, and I'm loving the NBA. The NBA has not been as good as it's been this year since the Jordan era. It's been getting better every year. You can't take your eyes off it, right, Lou? So
yeah, I guess.
yeah, he's being modest. But it's pretty good.
I'm being honest.
this guy. it's a lot of stories going on, and I potentially like what I see on. Of course, the big story, I want to get to this NFL thing. Jameis Winston being followed by a team scout everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
He basically can't have the freedom to be by himself for too long. And listen, I get it and I understand. You know, there does come a point to where we might cross the line. I think you have to put things in perspective. You know, he displayed a lot of, you know, immature behavior early on, but you look at what he's actually done outside of the rape charge, of course, which, by the way, he was found somewhat innocent, or what I say, he didn't get found guilty. They dismissed the charges. It was a lot of like conjecture there. So, hey, you know, obviously it's been tried two times, and Florida State found it to be okay, very suspect. So we got to go ahead and give the kid the benefit of the doubt in that situation. Has been tried already, right? Didn't even make it to court. State attorney threw it out, and so did the school. Let's not be ridiculous with that. So, but outside of that, I mean, what are we looking at here? Him standing in a lunchroom saying something stupid. Yeah, okay, he's 20-plus years old. Him going stealing crab legs. Yeah, that was pretty sketchy, but then when you watch the film, he didn't necessarily try to hide the fact, which leads me to think maybe he was getting hookups there before. That's what it looks like to me. He didn't even go. Yeah. He didn't even duck through the cameras or try to hide it. He went straight there, got it, and then walked right out. And what was funny, he went to the next door and paid for the rice. He bought that out of the castle. I guess he figured he had it like that. He must have just gotten favors from that public before. That's what I'm guessing. And maybe there was a manager on the clock that night or looked at the tape and said, hey, man, this guy just stole some crab legs. Became an issue. I don't know necessarily. He shouldn't have did it. That's the point. And, you know, and I've seen, you know, his whole demeanor just really kind of irks me from time to time. But what I've come to realize, this guy's really a very confident guy. And he's slightly different than Johnny Football. I think on the football field, he has more arm talent, and he's going to be a better player. So when it comes to watching and protecting your investment, I get it. But, I mean, how far do you got to go with it? You know everything about him. You've already done all the investigations you can. Stop trying to figure out ways not to pick him and pay him his money. He's good. He's going to be there. Let it go. That's what it is. You know what I mean? He's proven it. You've interviewed them. You've already made your decision. You've seen hours of tape on them. I heard people say, oh, his pro day wasn't as great as it could be. Well, what do we need to know about it? When we watch them on film and play football, he only lost one game, and that was to Oregon. And guess what? He wasn't the reason they lost. He was the reason they was even in the game in the first place. That defense and the offense basically let him down in that game. He still looked like a great pro and even had almost as many yards passing as Mariota. So the guy can quarterback, and he can make the big-time throw. And he has a good, strong cast, strong coach, a lot of people that can give him support in that locker room. Let it go. He can play. He can play on this level. He'll be good. He's the best prospect that we've seen for his heights, for his strength, for his football IQ, since that guy that they called up in Indiana, the football genius. Mm-hmm. Of course, I like him a little bit better because his attitude is more humble. So I'm always going to lean more towards Luck. And also that guy up there in Seattle, you know, the one that's only 5'10". That guy's pretty superb, too. I actually like him better than Luck. And you say, how can you say that? Well, how about 2 Super Bowl appearances and 3 playoff appearances since he's into the league? That's how. Makes sense to me. Makes sense to you. Well, anyway, like we run out of time, and, boy, this was great, Lou. Fascinating. I tell you what, we're going to give him something soon enough, and we're going to put together something special. And I've been saying it for the longest. People that have been tuning in and giving us hope, even through our downtime, we wish you guys a happy Easter. It was great talking. Look, we're going to have much more to talk about come Thursday. And Lord knows, hopefully we do this right Thursday, 8 o'clock, and have some more topics to talk about, more insights to, you know, to give, perspective from the common man, for the men that watch and love and I, you know, enjoy watching sports and athletics. So, with that said, Lou, we're going to leave what we call beautiful music, and then we'll pass it on and meet them Thursday. Say peace.
Peace.